You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. There's Ed Stetzer trying to do some stomping.
Well, you said it was Stomp. Daniel M.
Yes, I did. Have you ever seen Stomp, like a Broadway?
Yes. Yes, I did. It's amazing. I think it's playing in Chicago right now. If you lived in a real city, not like Nashville, Tennessee, and you came up to Chicago, which is a real city, you can come see shows like that. You've lived in a real city, though, before.
Yeah,
you've
multiple cities.
Montreal.
Seoul was like, Seoul was like 22 million people. It's crazy.
Oh, wow. That's like a real city. So Seoul and Montreal. And what other cities have you lived in?
Ottawa, Vancouver, Ottawa. Edmonton.
Ottawa. Eh.
Yeah. So, Ottawa's about a million. Ottawa and Edmonton are about a million people. Vancouver
so
is.
So it's about, so know, that's Nashville-ish. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Nashville is, but then when you get to Seoul and Montreal, is Montreal like millions? It's got to be millions.
Yeah, it is. I think it's like 2 or 3 million.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, good. Well, those count, and you can go see. Good. Basically, but it boils down to, can you see Stomp? If you can see Stomp on tour, then it's a real city.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I bet you can. And Nashville's like booming, man. Nashville's it booming. I got out just in time, and since then, the value of my house has increased substantially. And every day, I'm a little sad I didn't rent it. But anyway, that's another story for another day. And they blew up the Lifeway building. So,
yes.
Are you recording now from like a bench somewhere outside or what? You need to put in the show notes.
I mean, once they blew up her building, we didn't exist anymore, right?
Exactly. It's so funny. People said, so did Lifeway close down? I'm like, no, they got a way better building.
Yeah.
But it's so funny. But you've got to put in the show notes the video of the Lifeway building implosion.
That's a good idea.
My favorite thing about it was, of course, you know, my office were in that tower. My office was a little to the side. Though I did have offices under that at one point. But my favorite part was that the elevators, like the elevator shafts, like looked like they were falling the wrong direction. So the elevator shafts are still a true problem because we could never get those elevators to work.
It's right. And I mean, no amount of dynamite is going to blow it up. So
exactly. Those are the worst elevators ever. The new building is sweet, but the restraining order only applied to the old building. So I look forward to visiting the new building and seeing what's going on at Lifeway.
That's good. Well, today we're going to have another texted in question that we'll read. Now, typically if you've listened to our podcast for the last 266 episodes,
there's 266 of them. Thankfully not 666. We'll have to stop at that point.
We'll have to skip that number. We'll just go from
like hotels skip the 13th floor.
Yep.
So yeah, exactly. There is no 13th floor here. Move on.
Yeah. And in China, there's no 4th floor either.
Really?
Yeah, because that's that's the number 4, and that's equates to death.
I think I knew that, but I've forgotten. Yeah. So everywhere we go, people are a little suspicious. But anyway, I mean, superstitious.
Well, suspicious and superstitious.
Yes, I'm suspicious of whether you're telling the truth. But anyway, let's move on to our question.
Yeah, well, today's question is a texted in one. So yeah, typically we have voicemails that we'll play. So if you haven't sent one in, be sure to do so. We answer nearly all of them.
Let's be honest, there are some that are so kooky that we don't answer them.
Yeah,
let's just be honest.
It has nothing to do with anything that we're about. But most of the time they are. So we will play it as we answer questions and develop them along the queue. But today was a great one because it's all about how Christians can engage on important moral issues. All right, so let me read the question to you. And I mean, I tried a Siri voice, Ed tried a Scottish voice.
It was supposed to be Irish, though.
Yeah, sorry. Irish voice.
You know, I think we're going to get complaints from like key leaders in Ireland and Scotland for our foolishness. So
exactly.
I think Siri won't complain. You don't want to take off Siri, though, because she knows stuff.
Well, next time we should just do it where it's like, hey, Siri, read this.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll have her read it for us.
Exactly.
But I'll just read it out normally today. How can Christians engage on important moral issues like abortion, religious liberty, and racism without getting pulled into the outrage? And there is a lot of outrage online. When does our advocacy of these issues cross the threshold into diminishing our witness versus the duty to stand up for justice and against oppression? All right. And then how does this relate to church leadership?
Well, what do you think? I mean, what do you think? I mean, I like to know what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not of the opinion to say anything political from the pulpit.
Okay.
From the pulpit.
Yeah.
Especially, in one-on-one conversations, in groups, I might talk about, biblical justice and talk about it more from that standpoint, but not from the pulpit. But how this relates to church leadership, I think, is really a matter of, hey, you need to have a stance. You need to know how to disciple and how to move your congregation forward so that you're not unplugging, right? You're not unplugging completely mm-hmm. from culture, right? There are those whole distinctions. I forget who was it. What's his name?
Niebuhr.
Yes, Niebuhr, that he put all those distinctions there. And we'll put some links in the show notes about that. But yeah, I just don't think Christians can pull out from society and culture completely.
Okay, so how do you do, of course, Richard Niebuhr's categories are oft debated, but how would you do the, let's say you're coming up on Sanctity of Life or Race Relations. They actually have Sundays on a lot of church calendars. Do you not mention them at all? What would you do?
Yeah, so for those two issues particularly, I don't think the only time you should ever talk about them is on those Sundays.
Right.
Right. And I think every time you do talk about it, I feel like you always have to bring people and call people to a higher kingdom reality. Right. So instead of saying, hey, we need to be multi-ethnic because it's, acceptable to be multi-ethnic, you can't really say this. It's what is the kingdom of God going to look like? Where every nation, tribe, people, tongue, language are going to be together. And same with the sanctity of life, bringing it back to the gospel. I mean, it always has to come back to the gospel so that you're not saying, hey, this organization is doing it this way and look at the injustice that they're, and it's merely on practical concerns that you're basing your message on, your judgment on. And I think you have to talk about practical stuff. I mean, in fact, that was one of my last messages in Korea, talking about the providence of God and I mean, how abortion is a secret hidden sin in Korean culture. Long story short, but that actually is what caused a lot of tension and partly why I left the church.
Really? No way. Yeah, wow. So right here, we heard it here.
Unfortunately.
Terrible.
Yeah, so, I'd still preach the message.
So you left the church because of some of the conflict that came up from that. Okay.
Yeah, there's some political stuff about what I said, and I didn't realize it was a hidden sin that wasn't supposed to be talked about. And even in the end, I would
sort of
still
the
do
point
it again.
Of hidden sin, though.
Exactly. So, and I would still do it again because I was talking about the providence of God. And then through all of that. So yeah, what about you, Ed? What do you think?
Okay, so I like when you talk about controversial issues, and should you talk about controversial issues, I think the answer is carefully. I mean, that's ultimately should you carefully, and should a new church or an established church do that? I think the answer is carefully. So the answer I would say is yes. Now, what I would say is the way you do that is using the term getting into the higher kingdom priority. I think that's key, right? So it's not, okay, I'm not going to endorse, and Christians have been taught this, leaders have been taught this, I'm not necessarily going to endorse a specific candidate. I think that's kind of a normal thing. I'm not going to maybe even endorse a specific legislation, though sometimes we might. There was you and I are both in Tennessee when there was a pro-life thing. I think it was Proposition 1, maybe? I don't remember.
I think that's when I first moved in. I noticed all the signs on people's lawns. Yep.
Yeah, and so I was one who supported that. But I don't know if I did from church. I don't remember. But I think you can speak up on important moral issues, but to do so by not getting down to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
for example, not long ago, there was President Trump was accused of, and he sort of denied, he said quite the exact word, but the S-hole country thing. And then it was S-house, I guess was the S-house was their story. And so what I would say is, I mean, I wrote an article in the Washington Post. So, I mean, I would say, don't do what I do. I'm a public commentator. But what I would say is, I like what Larry's one of our pastors at Moody Church did. He got up on Sunday and he said, hey, we want to welcome you from all the countries around the world that we just think are awesome. And again, it was a way of saying, and people smiled but he elevated himself. He didn't get down in the mud.
Yeah,
instead he elevated himself to the higher issues. So what I would say is, as Christians, we can't avoid some of these issues, right? So everyone's going to ask you on LGBT and same-sex marriage is where do you stand on these issues? And what I would say is, don't be surprised by that. Prepare an answer that explains your view in a winsome and appropriate way, but be ready to give that answer. These are major issues in our society. So if somebody asks me about abortion, I say, yeah, you know, I care both for mothers and unborn children, and I care for all of life, and I think we should all care for all of life. But I'm unapologetic in saying, I put this in the context of a broader concern for life from conception to taking that last breath. Mm-hmm. And I say people are made differently than just anything else out there. We're made in the image of God. So I try to elevate, that's key. I try to elevate the discourse to the kingdom principles at work on racism, same thing. You know, I was at a men's retreat and somebody said they were reading cards, and this was Saturday, a few days ago. And the question we had asked was, you know, I'm kind of tired of talking about racism and race. And I said very cautiously, gently, and lovingly, I said, yeah, I'm guessing that was not written by an African-American. Yeah. And because to say that, yeah, is a reminder of these issues. So what I would say is, it doesn't take a lot. Get a little education to know, speak winsomely and graciously in the midst of these issues. But I'm actually not one. I think the church doesn't need to be silent. And I think it depends on how you define political issues. Here's how I define politics: endorsing candidates, sometimes endorsing specific legislation. So, for example, I don't, you know, the tax cuts. I don't know that there's a biblical view on tax cuts. But what I would say is I think there is a biblical view on marriage and what the Bible teaches about that. So yeah, what I would do is I want to communicate that with an acknowledgement that I respect all people. You know, the Imago Dei, people are made in the image of God. And because we disagree with some issues, I would recognize that we have minority views, for example, on abortion. Well, maybe not. The abortion issue may be a little different. But like on same-sex marriage, Christians have a minority view. And so I feel the need to explain graciously and winsomely that view, but I don't shy away from it.
Yeah. The question, I mean, asked, how do you make sure that you're not diminishing your witness, but still standing up for justice? And I love what Larry did at your church, because in one sense, if people didn't know that Trump said that, and maybe they're just not reading the news or watching the news, and they just had no idea about that, the way he talked about it, it doesn't necessarily pull them in to the fact of, oh, I didn't hear about that. Oh, what is he talking about? Is that what he said? And then all of a sudden in the service, their mind is completely sidetracked, right? And looking at the news. But rather, the way he addressed it was, hey, if you're aware of the issue, hey, this is, I mean, you'll know what he was talking about. I mean, yeah, there's no way that you wouldn't be aware of that if you've been reading up. So in that way, you're not putting all the attention on the current event or what just happened, but for those who are aware of it, you're still addressing it. Because I don't think not addressing it is an option, which sometimes a lot of churches do. They just try to, you know, just be, don't talk about culture, don't talk about society at all. And I love what John Stott said, right? I mean, he has the Bible in one hand, and I'm sure more people than John Stott said this, but, you know, the Bible in one hand, the newspaper in another, as he was preparing his messages.
Yeah, I don't think that was Stott. I think that was actually Niebuhr, but I guess I could be wrong. Now, people can send it in because we might both be wrong. It's probably somebody else. But here's what I would say. You don't have to address the issues of the culture on the culture's terms. On the culture's terms, it's a fight on social media. It's you're a liar. No, you're a liar. You can elevate the discourse. We can appeal to, Lincoln talked about, the better angels of our nature. And I think ultimately Lincoln was a former U.S. president, since I know, Daniel, you might not know that.
What's
a president? Is that your prime minister? You Canadians. But you elevate the discourse and you say those things. So again, I think people sort of want to punch back when really they got to look up and communicate differently. Now, one more thing let me add. Your church is not a advocacy agency, right? Your church is not, it's not a pro-life agency. Your church is not a racial reconciliation agency. Your church is not a poverty alleviation organization. Mm-hmm. Your church is not a religious liberty advocacy. Now, in a sense, it's all of those things, but it's not primarily those things.
Exactly.
And so your church is, its job is to make disciples. And as it makes disciples, it impacts all of those things. And discipleship, by the way, might I add, includes all of those things. But I think kind of this is where the question of what's the mission of the church sort of comes into play. So I actually had a guy really sent me a nice note. He's kind of a consistent critic, but he'd been kind of nice about it. But he sent me a nice note because I said something about the church must do something. And he said to me, how many things must the church do? Mm. And it was a good point because it's very easy to, there's 50 causes that you must be a part of. And I will tell you, you would not, I mean, as a pastor, you know, how many people come to me and say, we got to be involved in this. Here's what we got to be involved in. We got to be involved in making disciples who show and share the love of Jesus. Now that'll impact all of those things. But when you lead with those things, I think ultimately, if we look at even the early church, I mean, Jesus didn't lead with the inequities of the Roman government system. Jesus didn't lead with, 100 other things. I mean, Jesus didn't lead with the evil of Rome's systems. He led instead with a kingdom that came into this world that ultimately would change everything. And I think by elevating the discourse, focusing on kingdom values, I think we can do the same.
Yeah, so in order to get there and really be able to live out and put to action a lot of what Ed and I have talked about, really, you have to do the hard work in your church and with your leadership in discovering what your church's values are. So just a quick shout out, there's a audit that I have in my book, No Silver Bullets, that'll help you identify and uncover what the values are for your church, right? I mean, the vision, the mission's clear, right? It has to be a great commission, great commandment, contextualized version. But in terms of how you get there and the way you get there, that really is unique to your context and how you contextualize the gospel and how you reach people, how you disciple and lead, develop leaders in your context. And that's that whole idea of the values audit that I have. So be sure to check that out. And Ed, any closing words before we close out this fascinating episode?
Ding. That was my only closing word since you mentioned a product and a resource. You know, we mock each other by that, but I think your book's great stuff. It's something about bullets or something, No Silver Bullets. I should know the name of it, shouldn't I?
Yeah. One person said, hey, are you the one that wrote the bullets book, the silver bullet book? And I was like, well, it's No Silver Bullets, not the silver bullet. Yeah, you wrote about having 5 silver bullets, right?
That's awesome. That's so awesome. That's so much for that. And I probably ruined it for him. But here's the great thing. We also maybe co-wrote something called Planting Missional Churches.
Yeah.
Did we hear from anybody about that recently, about how good that book was?
Well, I mean, it's neat to see the number of seminaries and...
No. Who did we hear from? Have we mentioned this before? Little note from, yes, Tim Keller.
Yeah, you have it. You tattooed it on yourself.
I did tattoo it on myself. This is kind of the key book. And that's an international one, but for again, in that Western context, that's going to be us. So I'm just mentioning, I wonder if we should, since he sent it as an email or a text, I forget which one, can I publish it on stuff? I don't really know the rules. So
I think we can. He sent it in.
He sent it in. He sent it in. Let's comment on Tim Keller's comments on our book.
Yeah, we'll
ding,
put it in
ding,
the,
ding.
Yeah, we'll put it in the third edition, if not
exactly
fourth edition of Planting Missional Churches.
Exactly. I like that. All right. Good deal. Hey, thanks. You know, we should say every once in a while, hey, thanks for our listeners. It's funny how many places that I go and run into people who are just listening and finding it helpful. And I'm thrilled to do it with you. And I guess there's some other guy named Todd who does this too. You know, it's had someone yeah, come up fun. To me. Someone came up to me and said, you only listen to your episodes. And his friend was
really?
With him. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
seriously.
Don't tell that to Todd.
No. But his friend was with him and said, I listen to Todd's.
Oh.
I said, but so the commonality, everyone listens to Daniel. So that's a,
yes.
So appreciate your partnership on this, my brother.
All right. Thanks again, guys.